If you plan on hitting the road this summer, but you're still not quite sure of what to do, you might get some inspiration from Jack Barth. He's the co-author of Roadside America, a guide to outrageous tourist attractions. For his new book, American Quest, Barth wanted to do all the things he always thought about pursuing, but never did.
So I drew up my list. They're not exciting things like jumping out of an airplane, not things that are generally considered exciting, that is, not George Plimpton kind of things. They're more normal things that an American wants to do or to know about. Part of them were all-time dreams, like kissing a bevy of 60s sitcom beauties or retracing the trip from Easy Rider. And some of them were kind of mundane things I just wanted to learn about, like working at the world's largest McDonald's or working in a multiplex movie theater on the weekend that Batman opened, just kind of see things from the point of view that I'm usually on the other end of.
This is your quest in search of America, in a way. Are you very cynical about people who go in search of America?
Yes, because they're trying to find an America that is not evident. They have to dig so deep. They tell you all this history that either you don't care about or it's not really going to affect your life. I really wanted to find the America that is out there, that is evident, and maybe learn a little bit more about things that you maybe take for granted.
Is this your version of a road movie?
Yeah, I guess so. I'm really negative on a lot of celebrated road books, like take Blue Highways, William Lee's Heat Moon. You know, he goes out there and tells you about all these things that you don't see. He tells you about all this past and all this spirit stuff. I wanted to go out there and tell you about the America that is really out there. I wasn't trying to find like Charles Carroll, like the last wheelwright in Kansas or something. I was trying to find a prototypical multiplex movie theater, which is something that everybody experiences.
You have a little questionnaire for people to help them decide if they can be questers too. And one of the questions is, and you have to answer this true or false, when I finally arrived at my destination, do I immediately want to be going someplace else? Well, do you?
Absolutely. That's probably the whole key to this. As I found when I was doing a previous book, it was called Roadside America. It was a guide to America's wackiest tourist attractions. And I would go to a place, either by myself or with a partner, and we would try to hit like six places in a day, maybe go 800 miles. And it sort of imbues you with the spirit of just get in there, get it over with, and get on to the next place. And sort of this whole philosophy has taken over my life as in just everyday things. It's kind of like you want to pack as much pleasure as you can into the day, even if you're not really knowing that it's pleasure at the time.
Sounds more like impatience than pleasure.
Well, yeah, you can call it that.
Okay, number two is, have I forgotten the details of every book I've ever read, but recall distinctly the Love American Style episode in which Bert Convy takes a pal to see an exotic dancer? Do you find yourself forgetting books and remembering TV shows?
Yeah, well, that's also sort of a metaphor for just forgetting things that presumably matter and remembering things that don't. I guess the difference between me and a William Lee's Heat Moon is that he's trying to force people to remember the things that, quote, matter, and I'm trying to acknowledge the things that we really do remember.
One of the things you did for American Quest was to recreate the route that the characters took in Easy Rider. What did that film mean to you when you saw it, and how old were you when you first saw it?
I was about 13 or 14, which was cool because it was an R-rated movie. And when I saw it, I was like everybody else. I thought, oh, this is so cool. These guys are so great. They're out there. They're like really neat, and they're in this hostile, horrible America. I saw it again maybe 5 or 10 years later, and I sort of felt the same thing. But recently I was thinking about it and thinking, I don't know, who were the hostile ones? Was it those guys who were sort of transporting their L.A.-ness around the country and not really trying to make any concessions to the way people lived around the country? Or was it the hostile locals? So I got in an El Dorado with a pal of mine, and we recreated the route. We found out all the places they actually shot at, because they did shoot it in sequence on location across the country. So we drove around the country. Recreated the route, and everywhere we went, the people were great, and they also had very vivid memories of Hopper and Fonda et al. And when they were shooting there, and basically the group that made Easy Rider, everywhere they went, they sort of left sort of trails of their L.A. garbage. They were trying to seduce the criminally underage girls. They were smoking dope everywhere in public, and you know, this is 1968, so. Even if you were really enlightened, that was kind of illegal everywhere around the country, and there's really no way local police could react except with outrage. anyway, they basically provoked the people around the country. And my opinion of the movie now is that it was it's fine for what it is, but it is in no way tells any truths.
So this is based on stories that were told to you by people who were there at the time of the shoot?
Yes. We got some really good stories about basically the way that Fonda and Hopper were very much not the hippies they portray themselves to be. They were like L.A. movie stars, and they were expected to be accorded the rights that an L.A. movie star gets. There was one scene where Peter Fonda was screaming at a rental car lady in this roadhouse in front of all these demure Southern women, where he's swearing at the top of his lungs because he couldn't get himself an air-conditioned Cadillac in Baton Rouge.
Of course, they are actors. I mean, I don't think any actor pretends to actually be the character that they are.
No, but there's certainly no way you can deny that Easy Rider was supposed to be more than a movie, and it was more than a movie.
So did you see yourself as Dennis Hopper or Peter Fonda?
I was Dennis Hopper basically by default, because the suede jacket that I found in a shop fit me, and my partner had always wanted to wear an American flag on his back, so he became Captain America, Peter Fonda.
I'm curious about what kinds of trips you used to take when you were young with your parents.
Well, we would take road trips, Terry. Basically, if we wanted to go to Florida, we would spend 3 days driving to Florida. And, of course, like most kids, two things that are common to everyone's childhood experiences is that their mothers threw out their baseball cards and that their parents never stopped at the cool roadside attractions when they were on road trips. And that was true of me. So I went back in the mid-'80s for Roadside America and visited thousands of these places. And now that's the dream vacation for me, is basically doing 1,000 miles a day and seeing maybe 5 or 6 really cool places a day.
When you're doing a long road trip, do you like to stop at for instance, in New York and in New Jersey, there's, in Connecticut, there's state-authorized restaurants along the way? You know, like there's a concession. You know what I mean? Like the three-way rest stops. Do you like to go to those? Or do you like to go off the road and find regional places?
I'll tell you, most on-the-road writers are, we hate those franchise places. Ooh, boo, 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 boo. You know, I want to go to a cafe where there's lots of calendars on the wall, and, you know, a sassy waitress, blah, blah, blah. I've had so many bad experiences in those kind of cafes. For me, the point of going on the road is to experience weird and wacky places and to have fun doing it. It's not to eat in some cafe and you know, waste daylight. I for me, franchise places are where I stop. And I'll stop at a chain motel at night because I don't really want a bed with fleas in it. I mean, if someone tells me about a place that's really great, you know, like some place that's in Jane and Michael Stern's book or something, that's terrific. But I'm not like that. I would much rather not be burning daylight. I would much rather be out on the road looking for cool places than worrying about finding, you know, the perfect little roadside diner.
How do you look for places when you're on the road?
Well, billboards. I maintain a database of just places that sound like they might be interesting to me, and I'll basically plot a route to get from one of those places to the other, and try to find places in between. Talk to the people in the gift shops. Check out the tourist information centers, which are generally lousy because they won't have brochures for the good, really good places, because the really good places sometimes don't have brochures.
What's an example of a really good place?
Well, I guess some places that you might not know that are good roadside attractions would include a Three Mile Island Visitor Center. You know, it sounds like it would be just a boring kind of nuclear tour, but it's actually a great place. They've got a really good sense of merchandising. They've got coffee mugs shaped like cooling towers. They've got bumper stickers that say, you know, TMI lights up my life. They really have a good sense of humor about the meltdown back in 79.
They really have that stuff?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It sounds like something that, you know, would be in a wacky novel, but it's something that actually exists. They're really trying to capitalize on their notoriety, and I think that's good, because at least they're getting something out of it.
What's your next trip this summer?
Well, to be honest, I'm probably just going to go see if there's any really good cars going out west, and just take it wherever it goes, either someplace between Seattle and San Diego.
Really good cars going out west, you mean like a driveway car where you have to deliver the car from one city to another for a person?
Mm-hmm. That's basically how I get around, because I don't have my own car living in New York City. And it's really prohibitively expensive to rent a car to drive the kind of mileage I like to drive a car, 10,000 miles in a couple of weeks, say. So what I do is about 4 to 6 times a year, I'll just call all the driveway agencies and see what's going where. And if there's a neat-sounding car, I'll take it.
Do they pay you, or do you just get the use of the car for free?
You get the car for free. You have to deliver it in a certain number of days. You get the first tank of gas. But it's a great way to go. But I wouldn't recommend it for everybody, because then there wouldn't be so many cars available for me.
Good. Okay. Well, thanks a lot for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry.
Jack Barth is the author of American Quest.